Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
We've had our first managerial casualty of the season. I think we all thought it might be Everton because they had so many last year. But it's not. It's Hope Powell. She's left Brighton after more than 5 years in the dugout. We look over how it's got to this point and what the Seagulls can expect going forward. Elsewhere, it's been yet another good week for Arsenal, but a record-breaking WSL win against West Ham still can't keep Jonas Eidevall happy. God, I mean, how can you not be happy? You've had such a good run.
It was the goal they conceded.
Do you reckon? That one goal. And we look ahead to a massive one this weekend as Man United take on Chelsea. Joining us today and truly cementing their friend of Upfront status, we've given you a badge, we've given you passes, we've given you lifts and all sorts. It is journalist and broadcaster Jessie Parker Humphreys. Back in the building, back in person. Lovely to have you finally in the studio with us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I think this means that I was a good enough car guest with Rachel on Sunday that I could get the call up.
So. I can agree. Rachel? I did have to feedback to the rest of the group before we'd added you to the WhatsApp group, and I can confirm that we agreed to have you back because you were a good car guest. Good DJ.
Okay. What were the tunes? What were the tunes saying?
Well, we had this great conversation of if you could listen to, like, had to listen to just one song for the rest of your life, what would it be? And there was, four of us in the car. So we
every
single day,
choices.
Was it?
If you got to listen to it every single day.
Yeah.
It's the only, and the only song, like, you never listen to another song again.
All right, Jessie, what were your thoughts?
I went with Taylor Swift's All Too Well 10-minute version because I thought pick a long song.
10 minutes every day. If you add that up, that's like about a year of your life.
wasted, lost.
Yeah, but it's the only song I can listen to. So
10 minutes.
Want to like enjoy it for a long period of time.
Makes sense. She thought about it.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. All right, Rach, what's yours?
Sweet Disposition.
Oh, that's very old school. That's a little bit left field, that. Wasn't
that's
expecting
what I said.
That.
I thought it was a rogue choice, but it's got a really lovely story. So I felt rude.
I didn't realise there was a story behind it. I just like the kind of like, sweet.
So good. Ding, ding, ding,
ding, ding, ding. Yeah, gorgeous. Yeah. That reminds me of my uni days.
Yeah.
Like 25 years ago, whenever it was. But I mean, suppose in the car, you must have heard the big news. I mean, did you have the radio on at any point? Because the big news is Jill bloody Scott. Jill bloody Scott's getting into the bloody jungle, isn't she? With Matt Hancock.
What? The duo we never knew. No, wait, no, we don't. We don't need that duo, do we? Nobody needs him in any kind of duo. But Jill, yay!
What on earth? I mean, massive for her. I feel like, I mean, Jill Scott's a massive personality, isn't she? And I
think great.
This is going to explode her into all kinds of massive celebrity status, more than she even has at the moment. But, I mean, I don't know how she's going to fare with Matt Hancock. I don't know how any of them are going to fare with Matt Hancock.
He's probably the biggest scary thing that's going to be in the jungle, isn't he?
True story.
The
love
main
that.
Thing you want to keep away from.
I just feel sorry for Shelley Unit having to look after that cafe for the whole time Jill's away.
Oh my God, yeah.
I mean, it'd probably be an easier job to look after the cafe than it will be to like be buried under a box of spiders or thrown out of a plane or deal with Matt Hancock talking to you on a daily basis. So I know where I'd rather be, box to box or, with Matt Hancock. Jesus Christ, that's a sentence I never thought I'd have to say, but here we are. I mean, another big story. Big breaking news from Upfront, always here delivering it ASAP to you. Hope Powell, she is our first casualty. I mean, long-standing legend of the game, been here, there and everywhere. Obviously, massive career with England and then stepping into the Brighton management job in 2017. I mean, when you kind of look at her run, past three seasons, she got them to ninth and then ninth again and then finally sixth, which is the best that Brighton have ever done in the WSL. But obviously suffered a massive defeat this weekend against Spurs. I don't think anyone thought it was going to be an 8-0.
I think Spurs thought it was going to be 8-0.
That kind of came out of the blue a bit, and we'll discuss that in a second. But I mean, 116 games in charge. Apparently she's won over 40% of those games. So when you kind of look at the collective stats of Hope Powell at Brighton, she's overseen the investment as well. It doesn't feel like a bad run, but obviously that game was, I think that was the punch bag, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think, look, she is, we all know she's a legend of the game, and I think she did a huge amount at Brighton, both on and off the pitch. I think in previous seasons, there were times they could have done better, maybe in terms of results. You know, they beat Chelsea, for example. Sorry, Jesse. You know, they were the team
every
to,
bloody time.
Yeah, they were the team to break Chelsea's unbeaten run of like 31 games or something like that. But then they would go and lose to teams below them. So I think they never really developed any consistency, which was probably the most frustrating thing, because there were flashes of some really, really good football. And they did, decent quality squad last season, the season before. Not the squad's bad now, but they have lost quite a few key players this season. And that was probably, I'd say, the tipping point. I did think at the start of the season they were going to struggle. I just don't feel like, given the number of players that have left, they have recruited well enough. And I know we've talked a lot about the great investment at Brighton. Like, we can't deny that there's huge investment there. I think it was they've built like an £8.5 million training facility for the squad, which is amazing. But building a training facility in 2019 isn't going to, create this title-winning team in 2-3 years. Do you know what I mean? You need to see that kind of investment on the pitch. And I think Hope Powell did touch on that, didn't she, about her frustrations around recruitment. So sad to see her go, but I still think, a big plus on her managerial CV.
I think also sometimes it's just okay to say that things can run their course, right? You know, she was the third longest serving manager behind Kelly Chambers and Emma Hayes. She's been there for a really long time, and occasionally you just get to a point, right, where you've done what you can and you feel like, you've run its course with that squad, with the club, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like this big sad thing. And I think something that really stood out to me in her statement was about, kind of not quitting while she was ahead, because she just lost 8-0 to the Spurs. But there being a lot of WSL football still to go, and for whoever came in to be able to turn it around and get a good run at the rest of the season. And I think that kind of speaks to a good relationship still there, even with a recognition that maybe, obviously for now it's over.
And all the players that came out.
Yeah.
A lot of great positive support from the players, saying that she's been a legend to them, obviously taking the club from strength to strength. And, you know, Hope Powell saying, you know, as a club, we've made a lot of progress in the past 5 years, but I feel now is the right time to step aside and allow a new coach to take the team forward with plenty of Super League football still to play this season. I think for me, it's a difficult one because obviously she stepped away from the role. She wasn't kicked out because of the 8-0 defeat, which is nice. So it kind of feels like it was her decision. I feel Brighton have had a very challenging start to this season. They've not had, you know, some sort of easier games to kind of ease themselves in. And they've come off the back of not a bad season last year. I mean, finishing sixth in the WSL with all the incredible talent that was going on last year was incredible. So them coming into this side, yes, they've faced Man United, Arsenal, Chelsea in the first five games. Only the one narrow win against Reading in September. But I still feel because it's the start of the season, there should have been at least until December for her to just ride out this rough patch, see what the next kind of run of games would have delivered and then kind of made a call on it. But it sounds like it was made personally by her. So it's not a case of her, you know, being forced to step aside. It kind of felt like the right time. So it'd be interesting to see now what she moves on to. Do we think there's going to be a Hope Powell still in the WSL, or do we think there's going to be a...
In some format, yeah, I'd like to think so. Whether it's a director role or wherever that might be, she's got so much knowledge and talent in the women's game. Like, you absolutely have to keep her in it. So, yeah, I'd like to think so. I was going to touch on what you were saying there. Like, it would have been so disappointing had she been kicked out or sacked, because, like, as I touched on, investing in the way they have, you can't expect quick results. Your ambitions have to be, there has to be longevity in your ambitions if you're going with a invest in facilities type approach and have young players coming up through that way. You can't then turn around and expect to be finishing top table every season. So I'm glad it was a personal choice. And yeah, I very much hope that she's staying in the game.
How long do you think is enough time to kind of give things when, say, you got the investment coming in a couple of years ago? How long do you think, and what kind of results should you expect to be seeing really in the next year, 2 years or so from Brighton? Do we think they are going to be contenders for the Champions League spots in years to come, or do we think they're going to be sitting mid-table for a while?
For me, you have to start investing on the pitch as well. Mm-hmm. And I think next season, I think seeing how they recruit will tell us a lot. They have that facility now, which is great. And it means that the players they do have now are getting, you know, regular training in top-class facilities, which is brilliant, which is what you need. And it does take a couple of years for, I mean, you're the ex-player, you can tell us. It takes a while, I guess, for you to get used to that kind of level of training and facilities available to you. But there has to be good recruitment on the pitch to really show ambition.
Okay, and to take them forward then, obviously they're going to have a bit of a... They've had a tough start to the season. Now their manager's gone. Who do we think is going to be taking the job? Who do we think is going to step in and start saving Brighton's arse from the relegation zone?
It's an intriguing one, isn't it? Because they're an interesting team in that, as we've said, there's obviously the investment there, but the squad isn't amazing. I do think they've got some really exciting younger players, Katie Robinson, Elizabeth Turland, even having Georgia Fox on loan from Chelsea. But some of the names that have kind of come out, you know, your Willie Kirk, so your Mark Parsons, it still feels like it would maybe be a step below their level. So I think it goes with, what do we expect, you know, a Brighton to do? Because when you look at the teams at the very top, City, United, Chelsea, Arsenal, even Spurs, they're all clearly much bigger clubs. Is it actually realistic to think Brighton are ever going to compete with them?
Can I throw a rogue suggestion?
We love rogue suggestions.
I think Juan Carlos Amoros has left Houston Dash.
He has announced yesterday.
I think he's going to Gotham.
Damn! I thought I was getting a really good, like, rogue
insider news. Go on, Jesse.
That
story.
I would agree. Willie Kirk, Mark Parsons. It could be, but it could be a way back into the WSL for Willie Kirk. It could be, you know, an opportunity for him to show what he can do and hopefully be given a bit more time to show what he can do. But I think, yeah, Willie Kirk, Mark Parsons aren't bad shouts.
All right, we'll wait and see. I mean, we're probably going to get some kind of announcement the next couple of weeks.
It's probably already happened now by the time.
All that, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I mean, Hope must have been having the discussions maybe in advance anyway. So I wouldn't be surprised if someone's going to be announced very soon. Right, we've got to touch on the trigger point for Hope Powell's departure. Spurs v Brighton this weekend. I don't even know where to start with this game because 8-0 is not what anyone was really expecting here. And I mean, credit to Spurs. They absolutely ran riot. Bartrip, the Walsh mistake, Neville was just on fire, has been for quite a while now. I mean, Rach, you're a big Neville fan. I heard you got some pretty hot takes on Neville and where she should be going.
Well, for me, I think there's a really weird split in opinion about Ashley Neville for some reason. I think she should at least be getting a call up for England, at least a chance, because I think if any other player in, you know, one of the top four clubs maybe was putting in the performances she was putting in, people would be calling for her to get a chance. And I think I looked at some stats in terms of her versus other defenders in the league. She's in the 97th percentile for tackles, 99th percentile for interceptions, 96th percentile for blocks, 99th percentile for clearances. And she's been playing kind of a bit of a midfieldish role, playing a little bit higher up the pitch, again in the 90s for a lot of those things. And I just think there is this weird, like, some people just refuse to accept that Ashley Neville's playing really bloody well. I don't know why.
I just think, isn't there a problem, though, with how Spurs play versus how England want to play? And do you think, like, I just don't know if... I love that Ashley Neville is having a great season for Spurs and that she's become kind of this figurehead for them, right? But I just think in the way they build up and they move the ball compared to the way in England would, I just don't know if that's where her level is. Whether, because I think style, you know, you've got to consider style of play.
Yeah, bring her into a training camp then and see. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I think she deserves the chance. I mean, you've got players playing completely different positions for club versus country. That's, you know, they're playing a different style of football. Rachel Daly's playing up front for Aston Villa and banging in the goals, but comes to England and plays fullback. So I think it warrants a shout. Bring her to a camp. If she doesn't play, fine. But I think, you know, that what she's doing, I don't know what more she would need to do to get that. That's,
I agree,
all I'd say.
I mean, I've played with Neville for, I guess, about 3 or 4 years with Spurs, and the difference in the player that she was back then to where she is
massive.
Now is absolutely huge, like, for not, like, significant. I think when we played together, she was a good player, and I didn't realise that this was the trajectory that her career would be taking. But I've got to agree, I think she definitely deserves that call up. And I think that is part of being a good player, is that you adapt and you're versatile, do different styles of play. Because even in when you're with your own squad, you've got to adapt to different setups, different formations, depending on, you know, who you're playing. But, you know, for her to get the call up to England, I think, because, you know, I think it could be huge for her. I think it could be a massive confidence boost, and I think it's well deserved to eat the camp, at least. At least a camp. Go on.
Oh, camp.
At least a camp.
Bring her in and say, right, it doesn't work. It doesn't suit the style of football, or maybe she's not at the level we thought she was. Fine. But I think when you're looking at what she's doing, I just think it warrants some sort of... she's worthy of it, in my opinion. And I'm sure I'll get told off on social media, but I stand by it.
Of course you will. I mean, that's... We don't do...
It will be me. I'll be atting you.
Oh, my God. I'm going to mute you.
We can't have this. We can't have beef.
No longer a friend
team.
On the other
Badge removed. No more car trips. No more, like, lovely little discussions about what your favourite song is or whatever. That's all gone. Well done. I mean, Spurs' performance, obviously, huge for them. I've got to just touch on the fact that Gracie Pearce was making her debut as well for the squad. I've played with Gracie Pearce and I absolutely love her. She's so bloody adorable. And she was just... I just thought that was a really big moment for her. So congratulations to her as well. Obviously, Jess Naz coming back in from a long-term injury, making a really big impact with the squad, getting a couple of goals there herself. I think with, you know, Spurs and the trajectory that they're kind of taking, I mean, we touched briefly on them being Champions League contenders. Does this kind of really set the bar for them, you know, really pushing on and sort of being in that position? I know it's early days. You're going to say it's way too early to call, and you're both chomping at the bit to get in with a comment here, and I think I'm going to throw to Jessie.
I was going to say, should we do it at the same time?
One, two, three.
No. Wow.
We went out.
Wow.
Kind of on sync.
So we don't think Champions League spots for Spurs.
Not this season.
Not this season, despite that absolutely massive destruction of Brighton. Jessie, why? Come on.
I just
justify
think
yourself.
Brighton were agents of their own downfall here. And listen, I think it will be a big confidence boost for Spurs. Mm-hmm. And it's great, obviously, for players to be getting on the score sheet. And, you know, whether it's Drew Spence, Jess Naz. But I've never doubted that these Spurs players can score goals. They are good finishers. You know, they've signed a very exciting striker in Nikola Kazuska. But it's just too often with this Spurs team, they don't get themselves into positions where they have those opportunities. And in this game, I feel like Brighton gave them those, but I didn't think Spurs were really creating them themselves, because that Brighton defence was just so disorganised. You had Victoria Williams just, like, charging around, trying to put out a tiny fire on every bit. Not literally. Not Crawley's ground is like that sometimes, but not literally. But, you know, she was trying to plug so many gaps because there was just so much disorganisation. And, you know, we've seen Brighton switch from kind of this, like, back three to back four. There's lots of things to fix there. And also when Megan Walsh is having a howler.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
The way, you know, I really like Megan Walsh. I think she's a great goalkeeper, but this was not her day at all.
So someone tweeted us and basically said, she's like one of the worst goalkeepers in the league. And
no,
I refuse
not fair. No.
to accept that. She had a howler of a day, but she has been one of Brighton's best players for many seasons now. She's been standout and she doesn't get the credit she deserved. But yeah, she had a howler and it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But,
does. We've all been there. We've all been there, Meg.
Look, I just want to get ahead of ourselves. Okay, I just don't think they've looked great in their first few games. Played Liverpool. They played Leicester. They've scored, I think they scored 3 goals in their first kind of 3-4 games. I mean, unbelievable that they scored 8 against Brighton. But as you said, I think
that was a third of their total from last season.
Yeah. Mm. So I wouldn't kind of get ahead of ourselves too much.
Okay.
Just purely because I don't feel like there's been a lot of, and I know bang on about consistency a lot, but I just don't feel like there has been. And there's matches where you're like, yeah, like against Liverpool, first half, I was like, yeah, they could get in and score loads of goals. They didn't. And then there'll be other games where you're like, I just don't see where the goals are going to come from. So it's just that kind of style of play that I think they're still figuring out. And it's understandable. They've had key injuries. You know, they're missing Kai Simon. Kit Graham's not back yet. Like, there are still some key players that will help bolster the squad. But I don't think they're quite there yet. And more to do with the fact that there's teams above them that I just think will finish above them that are better.
Well, they only narrowly missed out on the spot last year. I think I really want to see the game Spurs-Man United, because I feel like that seems to be like the Champions League battle for me. I mean, I know I did obviously say that Man United were going to win the league this year, but that could happen. But I think for me, Spurs have all the makings and all the factors for a Champions League spot. I mean, the infrastructure, the signings that they've had. I mean, this is a squad that, you know, when I first started with them, we were playing at, what's it called? Barnet.
Yes, the Hive.
The Hive. It was, I mean, it's just, it was a shit show of a pitch, let's be honest. In the arse end of nowhere, we were kind of, every week, we didn't know whether we were going to play because the pitch was absolutely shocking. We were struggling with gym facilities. And now you look at sort of like the training facilities that the squad have, the promo around them, they're going on international tour, they're getting all these big names involved. Rianne Skinner coming in and making everything gel together nicely. I think it has the factors are all there. So I think maybe if not this year, I definitely think next year. But that also depends on the form of, you know, the top four.
Yeah, because I'm not sure there will be a battle with Spurs for Champions League yet. I think Man City will be above them.
I think they're in the kind of best. There's the top four and then there's the best of the rest race. And I think, you know, I know Villa, West Ham, like they've looked patchy as well, but I think they're both teams that will challenge Spurs throughout the season, Everton even. So I think it just speaks to the depth in the WSL now that there is four really good teams and then I think, you know, three or four quite good teams and then four not so good teams. But like it's all quite even.
But I agree with you, Chloe, in that they have the makings of. Yeah. And I think last season showed that they can capitalise in areas. You know, there was a bit of luck involved, but I think that's definitely something to build on. But like we talked on last season, I think they overachieved a little bit. So I think it will just take a couple of seasons for them to be properly challenging for that Champions League spot.
Okay, not this year then, Spurs. Next year it is, Rachel's called it. Or maybe the year after.
Putting my flagpole in the sand.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're
you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah. You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
All right, another strong Arsenal week. I mean, they're just going from strength to strength, aren't they? A big win from them, 3-1 against West Ham. They did concede their first goal of the season. So disappointing, really, if you can call that disappointing after...
You can if you see the goal.
It was an amazing goal to concede.
It was a...
Funniest moment of the weekend.
It was a bit of a... type moment, wasn't it?
Shall we explain it? Steph Catley, with one of the weirdest passbacks, she tried to go wide of Zinsberger, so like put it out right. Zinsberger was on her left foot, so completely didn't see the trajectory of the back pass. The back pass hit the post, came flying back out. Zinsberger kind of missed it. Dagny Brynjar's daughter and Steph Catley were in a foot race to get back to the ball, which seemed to have bounced towards the line. And Brynjar's daughter then like slid in to score the goal. And that music that you were just humming was playing the whole time.
I mean, not great for them. If you're going to concede a goal, definitely don't do it like that. But credit to them. It is their 13th WSL win on the bounce. Huge. I mean, they've started the season very strong, haven't they? I mean, despite that, Jonas is still having a bit of a kickoff, but we'll touch off on that in a little bit. Guys, what did you think of the game? How did you think it went? Because I thought West Ham looked very lively in those opening minutes. A couple of very early chances. Not too much for Zinsberger to do. But yeah, I thought it was a good showing from West Ham. I didn't think that was poor from them.
Yeah, I think West Ham always turn up against Arsenal. You know, got that derby spice to it. And they looked really good in the first half, as West Ham often do. they look great in the first half and then they tail off in the second. I still felt like Arsenal edged it in the first half, but they haven't been taking their chances maybe as well as they should be. They did create quite a few, but, you know, wide, saved, over the bar. I think Katie McCabe took out some poor guy's tee with a very, very strong effort. So for me, there's still a little bit of tightening for Arsenal to do. They still look a little bit loose at times. But I still think credit to West Ham, that first half performance, and they're very unlucky not to have gotten, not to be 2-0 up. Dagny Brynjar's daughter, who's been so impressive this season, had a goal disallowed for an apparent foul on Kim Little, which I think just because she's tall and long and Kim Little's small, the ref... Do you know what?
Caitlin Ford's foul on Kim Little, yeah. Wasn't it, basically?
But what summed it up for me was on the women's football show, the guys who were kind of looking back over it said, on first look, yeah, it looked like a foul, but once you see the replay, you realise that, you know, it wasn't a foul. And it's like, well, the ref has that first look, doesn't mm-hmm. she? And I think when you've got the height of Brynjar Zott here and the maybe height lacking of Kim Little and limbs, it just maybe looked like a foul on first, but it was not. It was not a foul. It should have been a goal for Dagny, and they would have potentially gone 2-0 up then in the first half. But
maybe that's why the football gods made Steph Catley do that pass. It was like in revenge for the injustice of it all. But yeah, I thought West Ham looked really good, and I want to shout out their goalkeeper, Sophie Hulyard, who was making her full WSL debut, and I thought had a really, I mean, she conceded 3 goals, but I thought had a really good game and didn't look phased at all, because I was worried for them that Mackenzie Arnold was going to be a big, big loss.
Mm-hmm.
But she just came into the game really well. But yeah, I thought Arsenal looked sluggish, and actually Kim Little did go off with an injury, and it wasn't until Jordan Nobbs came on to replace her. I think it was almost fortunate for Arsenal that, yeah, she just gave this massive burst of energy. Obviously, she scores within like 2 minutes of coming
second
on.
Second touch. That goal, my God. I mean, there's no chance. Keepers had no
chance.
She
was so excited she didn't know how to celebrate. Yeah. Well. Her arms were just like moving.
Absolute rocket. I mean, yeah, the keeper had absolutely no chance. Went for a ton of bodies. It was exactly what Arsenal needed. And, you know, credit to them. You've gone a goal down in a really sort of silly manner. And then by, what, the 52nd, 53rd minute, they'd already turned it around to 2-1, which is a scoreline that I think we're sort of more familiar with Arsenal West Ham. But no, I thought the chance creation was fantastic. You obviously got Blackstenius, McCabe involved in there, sort of whipping balls in for Manham. And we've got to touch also on the fact that, you know, Miedema not starting again. And it makes it a difficult argument to say Miedema should be starting when Manham just keeps on scoring the goals.
Because Miedema played the Champions League match, wrapped up like she'd been in all sorts of bother. She had a bandage on one hand, a bandage on the other. I think the thighs were wrapped, and then she got punched in the face as well at one point. So
Halloween vibes already. Yeah.
But like, she looked like she should have come off at about 70 minutes. She looked absolutely knackered, and she didn't. She was kept on, and so I'm not actually surprised she didn't start, because she looked really, really tired in that Champions League game. But Manham was there. Manham was scoring again. It's great to see. It's depth. And, you know, it's that depth we will talk on a little bit later following Jonas Eidevall's comments. But it's a big, big strength for Arsenal this season.
Do you think that's going to be a kind of thing going forward? Do you think Miedema's going to struggle to get back into the squad? Do we think Manham's going to continue to start? I mean, on the form that she's had, it's going to be hard to get her shirt back.
I think it's quite hard to judge, because I do think broadly, like Rachel just said, it is a good thing for Arsenal that they don't have to play Miedema, especially when, you know, if she has got an injury or she's had a little bit of concussion or anything like that from previous games. And in the past, it feels like, you know, we've seen Miedema really pushed to her limits, both with Arsenal and with her national team. I guess the question is in the long term, is this just a rotation thing? Is it a depth thing? Or, you know, is it moving on time? But for me, I would be looking at not Miedema replacing Manham, but replacing Blackstenius, mm-hmm. because I just still think that, I don't think that Blackstenius, I know she scored here, but I still don't think she's really managed to set this team alight in the way that Viviana Miedema was doing a couple of seasons ago. And I think to have Viv at top and then Frieda Manham in behind, that could be a really exciting thing for Arsenal.
Blackstenius did say that when she came to the WSL, she realised she had to get so much quicker. Her first touch had to be so much better, and she had to be so much quicker with it, because that was like the first thing she noticed when she arrived. And that's what I noticed with her, is that it's just taken her a little bit of time to find her first touch and to be a bit more effective in the box, because mm-hmm. she does get the chances. I think it's coming. And I think maybe having, whether the pressure of Miedema on the bench is helpful or not, I don't know. But at least, look, for Arsenal, you've always got Miedema. So, yeah, it's not a bad problem to have.
I mean, you both touched there on the rotation side of things. And I think Jonas Eidevall, despite his squad doing so well this season, has still found something to kind of miff off about, or mild complaint, should we call it? And we were kind of taking the mick before the podcast started about Jonas just wanting to say some things for saying some things' sake, perhaps. But he's basically called for bigger domestic squads to help clubs compete in lots of competitions. So his view is, with a tight playing schedule, I really think we should have bigger squads, but we should have the ability and the availability to have all those players involved in exactly the same way in the Champions League as we have in domestic competition. So as it stands, currently teams can name a squad of 23 for a Champions League game, but only a squad of 20 for the WSL. I mean, I can kind of get where he's coming from, but I kind of think that the point would be a little bit better had Arsenal not had an incredible run of form and also benefited from the squad rotation that they have on their bench and otherwise. It's not like they're coming from loss after loss because they're, you know, struggling to find players or they've just got a lack of squad depth there. So
yeah, if it was like three seasons ago when Arsenal had about like 14 players fit that they could name on a squad list, I'd get where he's coming from. But the one thing we've been saying about Arsenal this season is their depth. And that doesn't seem like a massive issue for me. Like, he says, you know, maybe the extra three players for the WSL would impact his recruitment a bit, knowing he'd have a player for every position on the bench. But I don't think that's what's stopping English teams from progressing in the Champions League. For me, like, it almost makes it sound like he's going into a game and doesn't know who he's going to bring on as substitutes.
Just like an eeny, meeny, miny,
moe. But you do know. You know this, like the plan. I know you've got a plan for every occasion and you don't know what the other team's going to do, but you're going to have some sort of an idea of who's going to be ready on the bench to come on. And for me, it would be kind of a, you know, an injury or something that would make you go, okay, we're going to have to change our approach to this game entirely. And because we haven't had 23 players in the squad, I now don't have a substitute for this particular position or whatever. But I just, the circumstance where that happens is just... seems like very unlikely.
Well, and it just doesn't make sense. Chelsea and City have 23-player squads. Arsenal have a 21-player squad. They've also got two players out on loan in Ana Patton and Gio Quiroz. They could have kept them at Arsenal. And to me, this just seems to be saying that Jonas Eidevall can't convince players that just because they won't be on the bench necessarily every week in the WSL, that they can't come to Arsenal. But as soon as you get a couple of injuries... Raffaele and Leah Williamson at the moment won't be on Arsenal's bench. So you would be able to put all those players on if you chose to have the fuller squad. Equally, yeah, you make five substitutions across the game and you've got 9 to 12 players on your bench, say. You know some of those players aren't going to be coming on. Does it really matter if some of them are in the stands? You know, if Chelsea have Alsu Abdelina on their bench, I don't often think she's coming on in a WSL game because that's where she stands within the squad. And sometimes, if, say, Mara Mielder's fit, she's in the stands. That's just how that's just another form of rotation, right? It's the same way you've got to keep players happy who aren't in your starting 11. You also maybe have to work with players who are those more squad players. And I don't see why having two extra substitutes in the WSL is suddenly going to make that so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jonas.
All right. That's told you.
I mean, I couldn't have... That was delivered with such
venom
force.
And passion.
I've always cared so much about squad depth in the WSL.
He did speak about, though, you know, European rivals getting the weekend off, whatever, like when playing Champions League games. And, like, I get that from, like, WSL perspective. If they're playing a game on a Thursday, maybe don't give them the Saturday fixture. Give them, like, the late Sunday fixture. Like, I can understand maybe doing that kind of thing around fixture scheduling. And we've often complained about WSL fixture scheduling. It often can be a bit chaotic. And I think sometimes that's to do with the fact that maybe pitches aren't up to quality, so we might have more postponements than we expected. Or, you know, in the Women's League, we don't play across Christmas because, you know, players aren't being paid enough to bring their family and loved ones over. So they go home at Christmas. They need some sort of break at Christmas. So that maybe adds to the scheduling congestion. But I think if we manage the last two seasons with COVID and terrible weather and all of the 900 games that have to be played in such a short space of time, I think we can manage now this season.
Well, and also, again, you look at Spain, they've got a league with about a gazillion teams in it. So Barcelona and Real Madrid could turn around and say, well, England have it easy because the WSL, they're only playing 22 times across the season and we play about 50 or 60 times. They've basically got a baseball league over there.
A moot point.
Yeah, Jonas, part two. Gosh, all right. I mean, the only thing that I do think there's some validity in what he said, I think, is more the fixture side of things than the squad, the amount of people that can be involved in the squad. Because
it is really difficult, especially when you've got, and even from kind of my perspective, you know, Conti Cup and then the WSL games, it does affect your prep, especially if you've got away games as well, like the time difference, you know, getting yourself adjusted. It does kind of open up the situation where you can be more susceptible to injuries and things like that. So, and obviously he did touch on the fact that he felt that maybe a factor in Leah Williamson's injury has been the overscheduling of games. So I do think there needs to be more equality of arms. I think if you're going into a European competition at that kind of level, you do need to make sure that all the teams are kind of on equal footing. So, but, and I think the FA has been, they've not been great really with scheduling games and things around competition. So
I can fully understand.
Maybe
that
he
point.
Has a slight point.
Yeah.
Let's but not go too far.
Right.
What I would say about Leah Williamson is that it's probably the fact that she went to Team GB in 2021, then she came back and did a season, and then she went straight to the Euros in 2022, and then she came back and did a season. I think that's probably got a lot to do with, you know, the injuries that players are picking up, as opposed to specifically this season's scheduling issues. I think it's an awful lot more to do with the amount of football she's been playing.
Okay. So we kind of think Jonas has a mild point, but also Jonas, stop making.
Do you know what? Like,
and like that.
We'll have, you have people saying, well, look, we've got teams that, you know, aren't getting paid the money that these teams are getting paid and don't have the same kind of travel facilities and all that kind of stuff to get to games. And I fully agree with that, but at the same time, it doesn't mean we can't ask for things to be better at the top. Like, we can still ask for things to improve, because that then does help other clubs and other teams as well. So just because they have depth and just because they have a big budget doesn't mean we can't then push for better.
What a lovely note to end that conversation on.
Beautiful,
positive. Well, we have got to preview the Chelsea-Man United game this weekend. I feel like it's one of those games that we've kind of all been waiting for. Me especially, because obviously I don't know whether I've said this before in all the podcasts that we've had, but Man United are big contenders, I think, for the title this year. Yeah, I think so. Chelsea.
That's such a unique point of view that I haven't heard from you.
Chelsea might have a look in, I suppose, at the title, but we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see what happens this Sunday. But yeah, just for the 11 goals for Chelsea this week. Obviously had a great run in the Champions League win against Vlasnia, 8-0. And then on to beat Aston Villa, 3-1 on Sunday. I mean, Lauren James back in the squad, doing bits. I mean, what on earth? I mean, this kid who's kind of been out, he's had a bit of a bad run coming from Man United, out with injury, been doing her rehab, plugging away. And now all of a sudden she comes in like a bloody firework. Explosions. I mean, talk to me, because watching her is such a bloody delight.
I'm just glad to see product at the end of it. That's what I'm so pleased about, because there's so much hype around Lauren James and I get it. But I also think we need to give the kid a break a little bit, because, you know, there's so much. Every time she touches the ball, people are like, oh my God, Lauren James. And you're like,
that's me. Yeah, that's literally me.
I know. But for me, initially, because she scored her first two goals this weekend and they were brilliant. But for me, there was a lot of flair with not very much end product or shot creation or whatever. Now we're seeing it and I'm very, very pleased to see it. And I think the way they're managing her at the moment seems to be working really well. You know, we didn't really see her in Champions League, but that doesn't kind of mean that she comes on and she's rusty. Mm-hmm. If anything, it's the opposite. She comes on and she's bloody incredible. So that's brilliant. And I'm hoping the way they manage her this season and the way Chelsea manage their firepower will hopefully be to her advantage. But yeah, I think the Vlasnia game will really help them, especially your Pernille Harders and your Sam Kerrs. I think Sam Kerr needed that, and that has just lit a fire. And I think, you know, other teams should be worried now that she's gone and scored four goals in the Champions League match, and behind her, Pernille Harder scoring three. Like,
the floodgates are open.
And now Lauren James has just scored her first two. It's a very good week for Chelsea, just to kind of, they've had a lot of games, and I think for the team's mentality, I think it's great.
And I've got a touch also on, I mean, James obviously a bit of a star of the show at the moment, but Wrighton, I think, you know, that Vlasnia game, my God, I've never seen whips in like it. And it was just the consistency on delivering those balls in, looking up, finding the player. Like, they weren't just balls that were whipped in and thinking, oh, someone's going to get on the end of it. These were pinpoint precision passes over and over again. That Vlasnia game was an absolute, it was a gold standard. They should put that on the FA website as like how to deliver a whipped ball, because it was just golden. And they're horrible for keepers as well, because they're curving in, but they're curving away from you as well. And it's just a horrible little cutback. But yeah, absolute touch from Wrighton. I thought she was absolutely lethal.
Yeah, 8 assists in 8 games for Gura Wrighton.
Just 8. Just the 8.
That's just ridiculous. She's really carried this Chelsea team through the start of the season. But I think now we are really starting to see this attack come together. And I think, you know, obviously Vlatsnia aren't going to be winning the Champions League anytime soon.
Whoa, that's a big take. You're right about that one.
Take all right. Right here. But some of that attacking play in that game, some of the attacking play against Villa just felt like Chelsea are really finding those relationships among those players because they have shifted formations. There are new players coming in. You know, I know Lauren James was there last season, but she wasn't playing. Pernille Harder's been in and out. Frank Kirby's been in and out. But it feels like this is starting to be a team rather than in those first couple of games, it felt like we were really relying as a club on just individual moments from very talented players.
And we've also just seen the comeback of Emma Hayes back in the stands, watching the squad for the first time since her emergency operation a couple of weeks back. And I think that's got to do things for the players as well. Sort of, you know, since she's been gone, obviously Denise...
Since you've been gone!
Thank you for that. That's lovely. Thanks for my little improv
Is
number.
That what you'd listen to for the rest of your life, Chloe?
I can't breathe.
This is what Chloe sings.
Version.
That would be the saddest
when
thing
I leave,
to listen to every day.
Leave the studio, she's like, I can breathe for the first time.
It might be now, but since she's come back, I mean, Emma Hayes, absolutely incredible. Back in the stands. Congratulations, Emma, coming back to your squad, who have been amazing in winning every game since her departure. So I think that's only going to bolster things going forward. But if we obviously touch now on one of my faves, Man United, just come off a 3-0 win over Everton. I mean, Skinner, he is obviously, I mean, he's on top of a mountain right now, guy.
What's he doing up there?
I mean... Shouting from the bloody rooftops, isn't he? I mean, praising
Wait,
the squad.
Is he on a rooftop or a mountain?
A rooftop on a mountain. There's a shed. There's a whole thing.
And there's a pole.
In
so whatever. Yeah. Just want to give the listeners something visual to sort of latch
on. It's like telling
there.
A story. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I feel like a kind of like, you know, like a Winnie the Pooh type
linguistic
story.
Artist.
Thank you. All right. You heard it here first. Skinner was praising the squad as one of the most hardworking and together squads he has ever coached. And I think... Credit. I think there's a lot of validity in that, to be honest. They've obviously had an incredible run this start of the season. What do we think we can expect from this game? This is a big matchup. This is a big test for Man United. And they've had some kind of middle level sort of table teams kind of competing at the moment. So
I think it's gonna be spicy. Fireworks.
Do you know what? Put your flagpole in the sand. Who's winning it?
Chelsea.
Well, oh, no, but that doesn't, oh, that barely counts, Rachel.
No, this counts more because normally I'm very pessimistic about Chelsea.
Are you?
But
I've not heard you say anything
confident.
Pessimistic about Chelsea in like the 15 podcasts we've had you on now. So
I said pre-record to Jesse that I thought this is a good time to play Chelsea, but I didn't really finish the point. I think, you know, there's never really a good time to play Chelsea.
There is if you're Man United.
For Man United, though, they've been in such good form. And I think the games they have had under their belt since the beginning of the season will massively boost their confidence going into this game. They'll know that Chelsea haven't been top of their game so far this season. It's going to be such... Maybe we'll see our first draw. Maybe we'll see our first draw of the season. Maybe it'll be like 3-3 or something ridiculous like that.
3-3?
But it's... Oh, it's actually a really tough one to call. I would normally think that Chelsea are going to edge it, but I'm going to go for a draw.
What I will say for United is that where in the past they've struggled against Chelsea is because they haven't been able to play out from Chelsea's high press. Mm-hmm. And Chelsea have absolutely destroyed them with turnovers high up the pitch and just them being really open at the back. And I think what stood out to me about this Everton game was that United were, and I know it's a different level of press because it is Everton, not Chelsea, but they were able to move the ball up the pitch. There were some really nice attacking flows from front to back. And if United can avoid making those kind of errors, then, yeah, I think they can put Chelsea under pressure because from an attacking sense, they're looking really good. But I think against Chelsea in the past, it's always been about that defensive solidity.
Also, playing like the way they can play for the full 90. You know, we saw it in the last game of the season where the match was so close, but come, you know, the second half is where things happen and Man United don't quite keep their foot in the gas. So that's another big area. They did it against Everton. They scored two goals in the second half against Everton. So that's, again, another confidence booster. It's so you just don't know how the game's going to play out. If Man United can come out like that and keep their foot in the gas for the 90, they could cause Chelsea problems.
I think it's definitely going to be a high scoring game. I think with the firepower that Chelsea have up front and the goal scoring form that they've found, but also Man United, I mean, 10 different goal scorers, they're reliant not only on a couple of players now, but I mean, we've had Toon, Golton, Leon, Paris, Garcia,
Gothia.
Sorry.
Lithia Gothia.
Blundell, and I think Paris has been obviously in flying form. I feel like she's really found her feet at United. So yeah, I think it's gonna be a 3-2.
I think
United.
Well, of course you're backing United.
I think Chelsea just need to get their shots to shots on target conversion rate higher because they're creating them, but there's not just for me, and I've said this a couple of times in the podcast, you know, they had 21 shots at the weekend, 7 on target. That number needs to increase, I think. And that's where they'll start really kind of teams like Man United, they'll start turning them over.
All right. Very, very different mixed opinions here. We've got Jesse on Chelsea. Rach, you think a draw. I think Man United 3-2.
One of us is going to be right. that's good.
So we can't actually get it wrong. Yeah.
That's actually really clever. We should do that way more.
100%.
We can say we're always right.
If one of us wins, all of us win.
Yeah. If we were smart enough to think about this before the year and a half that we've been doing this
podcast. Because there's only ever 3 results in a football match.
Literally
damn
that.
It. Why do we never
or
think
postponement.
Of this?
That's the only other option. So
weather wins.
All right. To finish off, I think we should just touch a little bit on Hannah Hampton. There's been a bit of a controversial mini storm around the fact that she's, Susie Rack has written a great article on the fact that we think that she's now been sort of dropped. And also now Carla Ward saying that she's been out of the squad, but was told maybe not to come to the game, but then turned up and was in the stands, but put out a very lovely supportive post. It's sort of very difficult to know what's been going on. There's not a lot of information under the fact that it looks like a kind of behavioural and attitude problem. You know, when I was kind of reading the article, I was a little bit, I think, sceptical. I think Hannah's a very young player. You don't know what's happening behind the scenes. You don't know what kind of battles someone's going through. I think there seems to be some kind of personal events affecting her. I know that there has been some issues with her in the past. I do hope that she's okay. But yeah, what are you sort of, have you heard anything sort of further about this, you guys?
Probably not anything more that can be added to the article. I will say that I know that this article's taken a long time to come out. This isn't something that's just been thrown together. And there are multiple sources in it. Like, there are reasons why Susie can't go publishing everything she knows and why she can't, you know, name sources or the fundamentals of journalism. But I think the article does touch on the fact that these issues have been going on for a little while through the youth setup in England, and now a club level too. You know, it's just a reminder, it's not the article's fault that Hannah isn't playing. Mm-hmm. It's whatever kind of issues are going on. And I think what the article tried to do is to shed some light on what is happening, because all we know from England and from Villa is that Hannah Hampton's not playing for issues, and we're not being given any details. And I think it would be quite frustrating if nobody was talking about it at all, because then you're kind of avoiding an elephant in a room. So I think Susie's done what she can and said what she can. But I think there should be more information for me provided from the FA and from Villa. I think you can't just kind of drop a player and just say their issues and not say anything else. I think we should be given a little bit more light, because this is her career at the end of the day. And obviously there are some behavioural issues going on, and I do hope that it can get resolved, because she's an incredible talent and she is still very young. So that's what I would say. I would just say maybe less kind of anger at the article, which is kind of trying to shed some light on something that we seem to know nothing about, because it's so frustrating to just be given like a nugget of this player is not playing and no idea why.
And it feels like quite a unique situation, because I guess we've seen the growth of interest in women's football, you know, so exponentially over the past, you know, even a year, 18 months, that a year, 18 months, maybe there wouldn't be as much attention or talk around this, because there simply weren't the resources to cover it. And I think, you know, that comes with its own challenges, right? About how, whether it's media, whether it's fans, how we talk about and protect players who might be going through hard times, but also, you know, it's having an impact on something. You know, clearly she hasn't been called up for England. Clearly she was left out of the Villa squad. So as Rachel said, something's going on there and we need to know about it and talk about it. But it's also a learning process, I guess, for the community as a whole about how all of those things tie together to also exist in a way. Because I think sometimes you look at men's football and the level of attention and hate, right, that can go there around players, whatever's going on in their lives. And obviously, we don't want to replicate that, but you can't ignore a story just because it doesn't necessarily make someone look good.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because the alternative is we don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the questions are, why aren't the media asking these questions? Why aren't the media asking where Hannah Hampton is? Why Hannah Hampton isn't playing? So you're a bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because obviously Susie can't put everything. There's a reason that what's in the article is in the article and what's not in the article is not in the article. It's not because it's a story that's just been made out of the blue. There's obviously something there. So as you say, it's a shit situation because we don't know enough for it to be telling us anything really. But alternatively, we don't talk about it at all. And that's equally frustrating. So hopefully there's more clarity from multiple sides as well. I think that would help.
We've got some of the facts, not all of the facts, but I think overall we just hope that she's okay and that things resolve themselves and hopefully she moves forward and we can see her sort of come back to, you know, club and maybe international level at some point in the future. So,
amen.
Yeah, from up front, wishing you all the best, Hannah. Hope you're okay. And yeah, let's end positively, guys. Right, what are we doing this weekend? Some big games coming up. Obviously the Chelsea Man United we just touched on. What where are you guys going to be?
We've got another Saturday off.
What?
It's really weird. There was no football last Saturday in the WSL, and there's no football this Saturday in the WSL. Sounds very strange. I'm going to be at Tottenham Everton this weekend. Let's see if Tottenham can do it again.
Another 8-0 incoming. I'm going to Madrid. To watch Real Madrid women versus Barcelona women.
Barcelona
in Liga F. So
nice.
I'm going for La Clásica. Is that, I don't know if that's El, what, El, well, it's normally El Clásico. Do you change it if
I don't
it's the
know.
Women's side?
I don't think. I know it's hard to tell, but I don't actually speak Spanish.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, that might come as a shock.
Yeah, especially because of that perfect sentence you just
How
said
How am
Spanish
I only then? Finding out about this now?
Blowing your mind.
That's crazy. I'm going to be at home this weekend. We're
still recovering from the Durham trip.
Still recovering from the 14-hour round Durham coach trip. But at least we won. Thank God. Back to winning ways. Come on, Palace. We're taking on Sheffield this weekend on Sunday at Bromers, which will be good fun. It's been an exciting couple of weeks for the Championship. I feel like it's a lot of big results, a lot of very challenging, tough games. Yeah, you really can't call it this year. So maybe we'll touch on a few of the Championship games.
Durham beat Manchester United in the week and Palace then beat Durham. Does that mean Palace are going to win the WSL?
Yes.
That is how it works, actually. That sounds just as confusing as the World Cup qualifying situation. But yeah, I think somewhere in that there's some genuine... Palace for the WSL. There you go. That's the hot take for this weekend.
Eagles are flying to the top.
Okay. Oh, love that. Maybe you should do the socials. No, don't do the socials. No. I'll be out of a job.
You're doing a great job. You don't need me on it.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Guys, if you're not already following, by the way, go follow.
Yeah, follow me. Follow the club. Follow it all. Thanks for listening to Upfront. If you've got any questions for us, hit us up on Twitter. I am at Morgie_89. Rach is at Girls on the Ball. Or Jesse is at JessieJPH. We will see you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster, Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.